Thank you very much. I should clarify, thank you for the credit, but I'm not actually a doctor.
Okay.
So the name of this presentation is Cost Satisfaction and Policy Effects of California's Pediatric Palliative Care Program. The evaluation that we did was actually pertaining to the pilot segment of before it turned into a program, but I'll talk more about that in a minute. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. And I wanted to make sure I got to this at the beginning rather than waiting for the end. Just acknowledgments to the California Department of Healthcare Services and the Children's Hospice and Palliative Care Coalition for supporting the research, and most especially to the rest of the evaluation team at the Center for Health Policy Research at UCLA. I'm not sure if this clarification is needed for this group, but just to briefly give some background in the definition of pediatric palliative care, or a piece of it from the Institute of Medicine. Pediatric palliative care is a plan of care to relieve symptoms associated with a serious medical condition or its treatment, and to enhance quality of life for children and their families, addressing unique psychological, social, and spiritual needs, and as distinct from the larger and somewhat more developed and well-known field of adult palliative care, there are clearly particular considerations for children with special health care needs in terms of their health needs themselves, as well as the particular role that families and caregivers play in pediatric palliative care, potentially above and beyond what they do in adult palliative care. So the pilot program that we looked at was called Partners for Children. It was a program to provide home-based, family-centered, coordinated, and concurrent palliative and curative care to children with life-limiting conditions. It was funded under a 1915C waiver from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And I believe it was written incorrectly into the program as an 1115 waiver. It was a 1915C waiver, focusing on providing care in the home or in the community as opposed to inpatient settings. The pilot ran from the beginning of 2010 to the end of 2012, and in 2012 it gained program status and was extended through April of 2017, but the results of the evaluation that I'm talking about today are only for that period from 2010 to 2012. So what was innovative about California's waiver program? It delivered concurrent palliative and curative care before it became federal law under the Affordable Care Act, so families would have to choose whether or not to go on with curative care or opt for palliative care at the expense of curative care. And that is now federal law. It also differs from federal law in that children to be eligible for Partners for Children did not have to have an estimated 6 months maximum life expectancy. So eligibility for Partners for Children involved a series of qualifying conditions in a multitude of categories listed there. They had to be under the age of 21. They had to have full scope, no share of cost Medicaid, so a low-income population. They had to reside in one of 11 participating counties in California. So California has, I think, 58 counties, so this is definitely a subset of the geography of the state overall. And then this key sort of measure of severity is that the referring physician had to project that the child without the presence of this program would be hospitalized for at least 30 days in the year subsequent to enrollment. So our evaluation looked at the cost of providing care to these children, their healthcare utilization, the experience of the families of the children in the program, and then also the satisfaction of the providers of care, which included physicians, nurse liaisons, who were sort of the care coordination linchpins, and then also the home health and hospice agencies that provided care through the program. So to do this, the cost and utilization part, we conducted a pre-post analysis of paid claims data that we obtained from the state of California. We implemented a 24-month pre-enrollment period. We had some concern about major episodes causing children to be enrolled in the program, sort of biasing the pre-period with this very large cost just before enrolling in the program, and so we decided to stretch the pre-enrollment period a little longer than we might have otherwise. And then we also implemented a minimum 60-day enrollment. That was the hypothesized minimum amount of time for the program to be able to have some effect in the utilization of the children who were enrolled. For the family experience portion, we developed original surveys in English and Spanish, and with quite a bit of input from experts and stakeholders in the pediatric palliative care world. The baseline surveys were administered to primary caregivers by the nurse liaisons at enrollment and as much as possible at every six-month interval as long as the child remained enrolled in the program. And for provider satisfaction, we had another set of surveys. The physicians that we surveyed were paneled in California Children's Services, which is the Title V program in California for children with special health care needs. So just some very brief background on the enrolled population. So the eligible conditions, there were 132 total participants who, by virtue of their enrollment period, wound up as part of this analysis. And half of them had either neurologic conditions or cancers. I'm not going to get into too many more demographics, but roughly 60% of the study population was Latino, and in terms of male-female, it was a pretty even split. So in terms of cost, starting at the left, very, very little emergency department use, or change, rather, in the per enrollee per month cost from the pre-enrollment period to during enrollment, and a slight increase, but not all that substantial, in pharmacy costs. And then looking at the larger bars, so a really huge decrease in inpatient care cost of almost $5,000 per enrollee per month. And that was offset somewhat by virtue of moving care into the outpatient setting. So there was an increase of a little over $1,200 per enrollee per month in outpatient costs, leading to the total reduction from pre-enrollment to post of over $3,000 per enrollee per month. And to check that the costs findings were related to actual utilization, we looked at a few different metrics of utilization. So in terms of mean number of inpatient days per enrollee per month, pretty dramatic reductions in across the board in some conditions. One of those metabolic conditions was the only category that actually saw a slight rise in mean number of inpatient days. And this is just to give a sense also of the types of conditions that were eligible. Some of these categories actually have pretty small enrollment ends, which may be affecting this somewhat. But on the far right, the total aggregate reduction in mean number of inpatient days of almost 2 days from pre to post. And we also measured readmission and average length of stay. So there was pretty dramatic reductions in readmissions, and the average length of stay for these children dropped from 17 days pre-enrollment to 7 days post. In terms of family experience, there was a very good response rate. Three-quarters of families of children who were ever enrolled in the program responded to at least one of the surveys. And the response rate for subsequent surveys varied quite a bit because of fluctuating enrollment, but 50 families completed at least two surveys. In terms of the results, there were very high ratings for individual PFC services in terms of their ability to reduce or control a child's pain, which received in mean 8.6 on a 10-point scale, as well as the ability to control a child's other symptoms, actually even higher at 9.3. In terms of overall satisfaction with services, the mean rating on the same 10-point scale was 9.6 at the first and second follow-ups, and it remained very high throughout the pilot, but the number of respondents dropped pretty dramatically at third and fourth follow-ups. And in terms of individual services, you can see very high satisfaction, and most especially with these care coordination services that were the centerpiece of the program and its ability to maintain care in the home and community-based setting. Then we also looked at a few constructs we developed around family stress and worry. We operationalized stress as having trouble sleeping and worry as general concern about a child's health. and used a predictive modeling that controlled for the child's age, for their disease severity, and also a construct we developed on family support based on individual family members' support. And based on that model, stress and worry declined significantly from baseline to first follow-up, and also from first follow-up to second follow-up. And I'm going to withhold any more details because there's a publication coming out about this, so you can read it in the Journal of Hospice and Palliative Nursing. In terms of family stress and worry, this is not based on the model, but just in terms of overall responses. In 97% of cases, families reported that care coordination, family training, the 24/7 nurse line, and pain and symptom management services were helpful in reducing their child's, in their own stress and worry about their child's condition. And the families also considered the four different therapeutic services that were offered under the program as being helpful in reducing stress and worry in at least 95% of cases. In terms of the provider survey, there was widespread satisfaction among nurse liaisons, among referring providers, and to a lesser degree, but still pretty substantial satisfaction among home health and hospice agencies. Then we also surveyed non-referring physicians, so these physicians who, based on their being paneled in California Children's Services, may be serving a population that could potentially be eligible, but for one reason or another had never referred anyone to the program to try to get a sense of visibility of the program. And 63% of those physicians said they had never heard of the Partners for Children program. So I think that's sort of the biggest take-home message from the provider survey piece of it. So in terms of limitations, there are some limitations with not having been able to validate some of the instruments we used in terms of surveying. I want to draw most attention to the limitations of the cost analysis, which showed excellent results in terms of cost reduction. That ideally, we would have conducted a difference in differences analysis where we have a control group and are comparing the difference pre and post in the control group to the group of children who were enrolled. We spent a lot of time trying to identify a control group and couldn't, just because there was no other population we looked at exhibited the type of disease severity that the kids in the program did. So just doing very basic comparisons on in terms of cost or in terms of ICD-9 codes and trying to match them up, even when comparing them to the children who were on the wait list, so who were technically eligible for the program and waiting to get in, there was still no reasonable group we could find to compare the enrolled kids to. So in terms of conclusions, just to summarize, costs reduced by over $3,000 per enrollee per month due mainly to major reductions in admissions, into the duration of stay of admissions when children wound up in the hospital, and in readmissions. Families reported that program services were very helpful in improving quality of life indicators, including stress, worry, and their ability to control their children's pain and other symptoms. Families reported extremely high satisfaction with the program overall, with specific services when asked about them, and with all aspects related to care coordination throughout their child's time in Partners for Children. And providers expressed satisfaction as well, but the visibility was limited among the group that we had considered as prospective referring physicians. In terms of implications, I think the most important thing that the Partners for Children pilot shows is that family-centered care planning and intensive care coordination form the centerpiece of a model of care that reduces costs, improves quality of life in families dealing with a child's life-limiting condition, and this is particularly so in a population where, as time progresses, we might suspect that things are getting worse and worse in terms of the quality of life, potentially in terms of clinical outcomes, although we didn't study that here. And despite that, families report improvements in their quality of life. The other big implication is that increasing program visibility through provider education could expand the reach. So this program ran for almost 3 years and enrolled about 160 children. And not necessarily judging whether that's a lot or a little, but given the proportion of potentially referring providers who had never even heard of the program, I think that increased visibility could potentially expand its reach. And given the overall success of the program in our estimation and developing this family-centered care model, we think and hope that California's pilot could serve as a model for concurrent care elsewhere. And that's it.